It's a lovely day in Wisconsin, and the year is 1937. And spring has just sprung, and the trees are all popping out their lovely new leaves. The new buds are opening up, and the cherry trees are all in bloom. The plum trees, the apple trees, they're all gloriously blooming everywhere. And I'm 10 years old, and I'm on my way home from school. And I'm going to do my daily visit with Mr. Heimlich next door, who is dying of something or other. And every day I go in and visit him for 10 minutes to half an hour, depending upon what we feel like visiting. And we have a nice chat, nice time together. And he feels that somebody cares. I care. I don't know what he feels, but I cared. And so I came out of Mr. Heimlich's house. He lived to the north of my home. And to the south of my home is the DeSwart house. DeSwart. D-E-W-S-D-E-S-W-A-R-T. DeSwart. And they were a very prominent family in the community. They had a very lovely home. They had once owned all the land in the area and had built it up. And the house we lived in was the original farmhouse in the area, and that's where they had lived. And then they moved next door to their lovely new home. And Mrs. DeSwart was a bitchy old lady. She was in her 70s or later, and she was just always a crabby, difficult person to get along with. And her husband was a person who lived his own life, and we saw very little of him. And all their children were grown and gone out of the nest and had very little to do with the parents. And the parents had a yard as big as ours, plus an L to their yard as big as ours, sticking behind the other houses that they kept because they wanted to have a garden. And it was quite large. And they had grapevines in there all along the edges, and they had, oh, just lots and lots of fruits and vegetables and stuff. And they had fruit trees too, but they did. They had apples, and they had pear trees, and they had cherry trees. Yeah, they had quite a nice garden. I'm recalling it now by seeing it. Anyhow, I finished with Mr. Heimlich and went over to my house. And I was standing on our front yard and looking over toward the DeSwart house because there was an ambulance there. And I thought, oh my, an ambulance. She's not going to have a baby. So I went over to the house. And nobody paid any attention to me. They were busy with what they were doing. I walked in the house. I had never walked into that house before. And it was a beautiful house inside. All the furniture was polished so lovely. The floor was wooden floor with area carpets, what kind of carpets? The Persian rug carpets, and all class, real beautiful. And the kitchen had real tile sinks in it, and really beautifully done, and perfectly white and beautifully maintained. Oh, it was lovely. And the windows were spotless. The sun was shining through. And everybody was going up and down the stairs, so I went upstairs. And nobody noticed me. Nobody even noticed me. I was a skinny runt anyhow. But I went upstairs, and then I went into the master bedroom, and that was kind of presumptuous. And there was Mr. DeSwart lying on the bed, and he was breathing heavily, and they didn't know what to do for him. This was 1937. They hadn't figured out all the things that were to come. And so he noticed me. And his kids weren't there. His wife was there, and the people from the ambulance were there. And they were not medics, they were not paramedics, they were not anything special. They were just people to lift the whole body and take him to the hospital, And so he looked at me, and I've never told this story before, but he looked at me And he said, I was called Junior at that time. And he said, Junior, you're the only one I can say this to. Will you look after Mother? Sure, sure. What do you want me to do? Just make sure she's always okay. And I said, sure. You're going to be okay too, aren't you? You're okay, aren't you? And he says, no. He says, I'm going to go away, but I'll always be loving you and I'll always be watching you. And he didn't even know me, you know. But he knew I was Junior because he'd seen me next door, you know, and he'd seen me as he was coming in and out the driveway and stuff. And because our drives were right close, right next to each other. And so I'd never talked to the man in my life. And I'd seen him, but he was, you know, just something there. And so I said, okay, you know, I said, you sure I can, are you sure you want me to? You're the only one. Because that was the only one there that he could speak to and say this to. And so his wife wasn't hearing this. But then all of a sudden, she realized her husband was talking to me and saying something significant. And he repeated it several times because he wanted to make sure that I caught on. I was 10. And so I said, okay. And she looked at me for the first time in her life with a feeling of compassion in her heart, you know. And it's quite something. But that's Mrs. DeSwart. That's Mrs. DeSwart.
10 years old.
And so Mr. DeSwart died. And they had his funeral. And I didn't go. I had no idea where it was or anything else like that. And I really didn't know him. All I knew is that he asked me to do something. And so the next day, after the funeral, I came over to her house and I said, Mrs. DeSwart, is there anything I can do for you? And she said, what can you do for me? And I said, well, whatever you want me to do, I want to do for you. Well, she said, get out of here. So I left the house, you know, because she was a bitchy old lady. And so I left the house and I said, just remember, your husband said I should help you whenever I can. And she says, blah, blah, blah. You know, she was, it was tough. And so a couple days passed. And then one day, it was a Friday night, and she called on the phone, and she said, my mom sent me over there. And my mom said, what did you do? So I went over there. And Mrs. DeSwart had an opportunity to sort of mellow herself a little bit and feel just very peaceful and at peace. So my mother told me that Mrs. DeSwart called and wanted me to come over, and I should go over there right now. So I went next door. We'd already had supper, and she had had her supper alone. Her kids came for the funeral, and they went, you know. And then Mom, who was a bitchy boss, was all by herself. And she says, Junior? I said, yeah. She says, will you come and help me? And I said, what would you like me to do? And I said, she said she wanted me to help her. And I said, okay. What do you want me to do? She says, well, would you come over and work for me every Saturday and clean my house and take care of it for me? I said, sure. She says, I'll pay you 10 cents for coming over and working on Saturday and taking care of the house. Wow, how wonderful, you know. And so I did that. So every Saturday, I cleaned her house from top to bottom. Now, it wasn't just a matter of cleaning her house. It was a matter of cleaning her house with her watching every move I made. her instructing me how to move the desk cloth around the knobby furniture that with the legs, you know, with all the big knobs on it and stuff like that. And I had never had that experience. I mean, my mom made sure we did things good, but she wasn't the Gestapo, you know. And, of course, the Second World War hadn't even happened yet. So she was very definite. She was very definite with me. And she told me how to clean the grout and the kitchen counters, you know, and in the bathrooms, and how to make everything perfect, and how to wet mop the floors, the varnished wooden floors, the beautiful hardwood floors all over the house, and how to vacuum. And she taught me everything, and she was right on my back. And I had a problem. I had a really great problem. Her husband had asked me to help her, and how could I be angry at her for being so demanding of me? So I just did it. I just did it. Now, all the kids in the neighborhood, they said, how'd you get a job like that? How'd you get to, you know, have money coming in and stuff like that, you know? But it was depression time. And I said, well, I said, she just wanted me and I helped her, you know. So then they had a beautiful big lawn out in front, which was bigger than the front lawn over at the embassy going toward the fence, you know. And lovely big trees and a little forest in the corner of the yard, a little forest with just lovely pine trees and stuff. And we used to play hide and seek in there, and it was always so nice. But now the neighbor kids wanted to play hide and seek. Oh, don't go in there. I'm keeping that up. Well, what she did was she said, if I will come two evenings after school and come over and keep up the yard. And she'd give me another 10 cents. So I mowed the lawn, you know, as often as it needed. And I took care of the yard in the front. The backyard had a dozen apple trees in it, you know. And so it really wasn't too much to take care of except to rake up the leaves and to pick up the apples and things like that. No. And so as I did this, I just paid attention to what she had asked me to do. Well, now, her backyard went beyond our backyard, another 100 feet or so, and they had a 6-car garage back there. Well, now that had to be cleaned too. And then they had a special little single carport next to the house, next to our drive, and through which they drove. They could drive their car in the rain or the winter and get out of the car and walk into the house without being in the weather, which is quite lovely. And so here I was, 10 years old, having this wonderful privilege of being a full-time worker almost, you know, at her house, taking care of it. And I was proud as could be. Now, it wasn't until a couple of years later when my dad allowed me to go and work for him and paid me a little more that it was a nice thing. I was about 13 or so. I had to be old enough to carry the bricks and so forth on the job. But I worked for Mr. Swart for several years, and I was angry, but I was proud. I was proud that her husband had asked me. I was angry that she was treating me so cruelly, and I'm sure she treated all of her help that way in the past. But here this 10-year-old kid, diligent, was able to take care of her lawn and her backyard. I didn't take care of the big garden. That just sort of went to seed because nobody was taking care of it. And I know that if I were a little older, I would have been able to handle that. But at that time, I was taking care of as much as I could. And her house was always spotless, always perfect. And she didn't touch the house at all. All she did was to make sure that I touched them. And she had, over a period of future years, maids or girls come in and work for her, and they stayed for a few days or a week, and then they were not there. And so I had to come over and help her out in between. But it was the most beautiful training experience that I'd ever had in my life. And I was able to do anything. I was able to clean the toilets without thinking the toilets were terrible. That's where I learned how to use the razor in the toilets and clean them up nice up under the edges and stuff. I was able to polish all the windows and not make a difficult task out of it because we used newspaper, you know. Mm-hmm. And the windows shined just gloriously and perfectly. And she wouldn't let me climb the ladder and go outside and do it, but she had me do it from the inside, you know, whatever I could. And that was a 5-bedroom house upstairs. Mm. So you can imagine what the downstairs was. Mm. 5-bedroom house upstairs because they had a lot of kids. But they were all off in their own worlds, you know. And Mr. Swart was, and that house was still there right next door to us there. And the Kunlich house is still there too. But it was quite an experience. Mm. And I will never forget the honor that I had as I stuck my nose into that private time as Mr. DeSwart was dying.
Yeah.
And he said that to me because there was nobody else to say it to. I mean, I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
But later, I mean, I realized there was just nobody else to say it to. He couldn't say it to his wife, take care of yourself, you know. And he couldn't say to the people who are going to pick up his body, take care of yourself, you know. But there I was, and what an honor, what a privilege. You see, we have many honors that are given to us in our life, but we don't always appreciate them. And we don't always realize how significant they can be. And whenever I think of Mrs. DeSwart, I think, what a joy. Now, that was Mrs. DeSwart. Now, another day, I'll tell you about Mrs. Kunlich. And then another day, I'll tell you about the lady up the street. I've forgotten her name. But her daughter had committed suicide in the garage. And I was drawn into her life. And I think these little vignettes can be very interesting if you look at them as you have too had learning experiences like this, but you don't always remember them. And sometimes you put too much importance on them rather than just saying, what a glorious learning experience, what a learning for humility, and what a learning for respect for elders and others. You see, these are beautiful things in our life, and we're very blessed to have them. That's the story.